Welcome to today's episode of the Normalize Surrogacy podcast by Surrogacy Mentor. I'm your host, Carrie Flamer Powell, experienced gestational surrogate, surrogacy agency founder, and owner of Surrogacy Mentor, where our aim is to help surrogates match with reputable surrogacy agencies for a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey. Today, I'm excited to welcome my very special guest, nurse practitioner and fertility coach, Dr. Tara Brandner. Hi, Tara.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes, great to have you on the episode today and talk about infertility and how it pertains to surrogacy. So before we jump in with my questions for you, I want to tell our listeners a little bit about you and your background. So Dr. Tara Brandner is a doctorate nurse practitioner, fertility coach, and infertility warrior. She spent the past decade pursuing nursing, including a master's and doctorate degree. She endured a long road through endometriosis and miscarriage, followed by infertility treatments and a traumatic pregnancy. She sought professional and medical intervention from two fertility clinics during that time. Dr. Tara then decided she wanted to help others in their journey to grow their family, and she now provides a full suite of coaching services and support for those struggling to build their family. Dr. Tara is certified through the American Society of Reproductive Medicine. She's a natural family planner with the Marquette Method and a certified hormone puzzle fertility coach. So great background there, and you've had some personal experience with infertility. So why don't we start there? Why don't you tell us a little bit about your personal background with your fertility journey to build your family?
Yeah, so it's definitely a journey I didn't think I'd ever be on. I didn't have any reason to really think that there'd be an issue when it was time to try to conceive. I knew I wanted to get my master's and my doctorate and then start a family. You know, you have this plan in your head and then it doesn't go as expected. So about 6 months into our conception journey, we had a miscarriage around 6 weeks. And no one in my family had had one. There was just really no conversation around. It took us a while to conceive. It was almost like my mom had got pregnant easy. I'm the oldest child, so I really didn't have any siblings that were trying. No aunts, cousins, or anything like that had really expressed any issues. There was really just no reason to think that we would have issues trying to conceive. Another 3 months went on, and I know during that time, I was like, something isn't right. Like, I just had this gut intuitive feeling. I brought it forward to a provider who met me with resistance. I live in a rural community. And she's like, well, you do know you're going to have to travel. And I'm like, well aware that that's going to be part of the plan. Explain that, you know, IUI would be the next round. So we decided to just keep trying on our own. And I brought forward again another month later that I wanted to pursue other options and ended up going directly to my OBGYN, not her physician's assistant that was working with her. And she's like, we're done. It's time for you to go see reproductive medicine, and appropriately transferred my care to reproductive endocrinology. We did 3 rounds of IUI back to back with no success. And in fact, our third round, I feel like I could write a whole chapter on that. I remember being in our tornado shelter, giving my trigger shot with the sirens going. And I was like, I don't care. This is timed. It has to be done at this time. Like, I doubt there's really a tornado out there. You know, we don't get those, thank gosh, around here enough. But I was bound and determined to give that trigger shot. And there was just so many issues that had happened with my work schedule and having to find a provider to cover my ER call. And it was just a mess. And I knew we needed a break. And so we took a few months off. I had talked to some people who had been down the IVF route before. And I had met a family friend at that time as well, who worked at a really well-known clinic in Colorado as an embryologist. And he really educated me on clinic statistics and how to screen clinics and things to look for when going into IVF that I had no clue. As a medical provider, I had no clue this type of data was out there, that I should be screening my clinic, that not all reproductive clinics are the same, that not all providers within one clinic are the same. I just learned so much within like 3 conversations with this individual that really changed our route going forward. Right. So I had Taking a fellowship position for 1 month in Washington, D.C. with the nurse practitioner group, took a break, found myself again, which I think is really important, found ourselves as a couple again, mm-hmm. and then carried on into our initial appointment with this new provider at a clinic that just had better success rates, a better protocol, and really where I felt I could be a patient. I didn't have to be on guard. I didn't have to be a medical mm-hmm. provider. I didn't feel like I had to have like 8,000 questions ready. I felt like I was really well taken care of. Process was smooth. Communication was good, which is just so important when you're going through infertility in general. And during our IVF journey, we had a cycle canceled. Which was devastating in itself, whether it's a retrieval or a transfer, it's devastation for all involved. Yes. And then we had two embryos that made it past genetic screening. And I was like, why only two? You know, to me, that number just didn't add up. And he explained he stimmed me really low because it was my first round. It could be egg quality, just all the things I really didn't want to hear. So during that canceled cycle, I ended up going skiing. I love snow skiing. I really felt like I once again needed to focus on something that I enjoyed, that brought me joy, that just took my mind off of everything. And we went back into our transfer and we transferred both embryos and one implanted, which I share with my patients and I tell myself this after going through counseling as well. That's a failure too. That's a loss. That was a embryo that didn't make it. It was hopes. It was dreams. It was, to me, it was a vision for a family that was devastating again, you know, in this journey. And so as much as I really wanted to be happy and excited, like I was finally pregnant, numbers were going up, levels were good, I had this like sense of sadness too. At 12 weeks, I had to start doing ultrasounds every 2 weeks because there was some questions with the length of my cervix. And so my reproductive doctor was very, very insistent that I had this done. So I remember at one point, like putting on about, what was it? Like I maxed in 2 years of leasing a vehicle, I had put on like almost 30,000 miles with like appointments and all this stuff. It was just crazy. All the traveling that goes involved that people don't think about too, when it comes mm-hmm. to this journey, many have to travel, take time off of work. And so, we were doing well. Pregnancy was going well. I'll be honest. And I share this a lot too. And I think it needs to be said more. It's really hard to get excited when you've been through mm-hmm. infertility, when you've been through loss, miscarriage, you know, failure. It's really hard to get excited. And I don't know if I ever really was able to let that guard down until like the last couple of weeks of pregnancy. But at mm-hmm. 32 weeks, I woke up. It was a week of Thanksgiving. I woke up to go bathroom and had this huge gush of blood. And I was supposed to be on call for our ER in 45 minutes. And so I'm sitting on the toilet bleeding. I'm like, try to triage in my head. Do I call my OB or do I call a different provider because I need them to pick up call? Like, where do I put myself, you know, in this position? And so ironically, I called a different provider to try to find call first before calling my own OB. While I'm sitting on the toilet and there's like blood gushing out of me. I knew the process of how long it could take to get a, you know, helicopter. Cause she instantly was like, you need to go to the ER. I'm dispatching flight. And I was like, I can get you faster driving. Cause I know how long this takes to get them here, to get me loaded up. She's like, so I started driving. At the time my husband worked, 30 miles away. Mm-hmm. And so I was driving to pick him up. And she called me and she's like, get to that ER. Like, I know you didn't go to the ER where you work at, get to the ER in his town. And I was like, trust me, I know I can make it there faster. She's like, this isn't about you anymore. This is about that baby. I need to know that baby's okay. I know you're okay. I don't know that baby's okay. So it was really hard as a medical provider sometimes too, to like turn that hat off and really like listen and do and think about like, okay, there's other people that need to take care of you, let them take care of you. Right. And so, long and short, thankfully he was okay. The placenta had just, you know, ripped a little bit. I spent 3 nights in the hospital, but I had to spend 4 weeks in the town where my OBGYN was, which is 2 hours away from where I live. I no longer worked. It was a whole different dynamic that happened. It was like my life got just flipped upside down. Like, thankfully he was okay. I went in for, you know, twice a week, appointments. Everything was always fine. And then I was met with an emergency C-section at 39 weeks. And that was a whole other thing I never planned for, because of course I was podcasting and reading books. I was going to do natural birth and all of these things. Mm-hmm. That whole plan, I was like, something's got to go right in this. Like, why can't I just have my plan? We all have like my plan. Why is this not working? And so it was like a C-section recovery, and it was just like one thing after another. And so through all of that, as a healthcare provider, I just saw so many missing links and gaps in the system. Most importantly, when it came to mental and emotional support and wellness, guidance and understanding, someone to communicate with, someone who understands, like just a lot of lack of communication as well kind of happened through that. And so that's where I kind of was like, okay, what can I do, you know, as a healthcare professional to help others go through this differently? We can't control a lot of what happens in this journey, but there are things we can do to move through them different and just with support and communication. And right. So my journey looks different today than it did 5 years ago, but it's definitely one that we just never think that we're going to be on. And there's just so many ups and downs that we can't control.
Yeah, that's so true. It's everyone's journey is, like you said, different, but so many people go through something similar and they just never really talk about it. And I think talking about it is the whole reason why we're both doing what we're doing, right? And this podcast.
100%. Absolutely.
So that people understand that there are a lot of different paths to parenthood, and a lot of them are not easy, right?
Yes.
So, okay. So you went through this experience, and then you came to this point where you changed your career path a bit and decided this is what you wanted to do. So in your work as a coach, have you worked with clients who chose surrogacy as a way to build their family? And can you tell us a little bit about their paths and their journey to surrogacy?
Yes. And so the first two patients I like to use that come to my mind have two completely different medical situations. So the first one is she was 21 at the time and had heavy, you know, painful bleeding periods, all of that going on. And she ended up with a hysterectomy at age 21. And there's so much that goes into that. My diagnosis, I should add to my personal journey, was unexplained, and it turned into endometriosis. And I have done so much learning self, whether it's medical or self-learning when it comes to endometriosis. But here she found out she had endometriosis. And recently, she's now 27 years old, you know, got married, shared while they were dating with her boyfriend at the time, I have no uterus. Here's what happened. If this is going to be an issue for us moving forward, you had to have this really hard conversation in her 20s, you know, dating about this and get, you know, he's a great person. You know, they get married, they're so cute and happy, and it's time they want to have a baby. And they know surrogacy is the only way this is going to happen. They don't have a lot of money. They are working, you know, 2 or 3 jobs, doing, you know, all the things to try to save money. They end up doing a Facebook post to try to find a surrogate versus an agency. Mm-hmm. And then ended up bringing in an agency just for pieces of it. But they're now working, they're currently to this day working to save over $100,000 just to go through the surrogacy journey that she's known she's going to have to go through since she was 21 years old. In the meantime, she goes and she's still having every symptom, like she's obviously not bleeding, but she's having pain, she's having endometrial symptom, fatigue, bloating, all these symptoms of endometriosis are still there. We send her for excision surgery, and the excision doctor told her there was so much scar tissue, there was so much endometriosis in there, and she never needed to have a hysterectomy. He truly believes that she did not need a hysterectomy. This is all, you know, endometriosis. So I've really shifted into like having a discussion with young women really early on about their periods to try to capture these cases, such as in the case of the disease of endometriosis, where we can work with that, get them in the hands of an appropriate healthcare provider who is not taking away their ability to be a mother and do pregnancy and move through that journey of their life when the time is right, you know, at that early age. And so The other patient that comes to my mind that I'm working with currently, I have three of them I like to share about actually, but the one in particular, he's now six, that they went through surrogacy. So she did like six IUIs, four rounds of IVF, and they never could figure out why she would not have an embryo. An embryo would about three times would implant, but never stay. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up using a surrogate. And then they came to the point where they're ready to have a second child, but they had no more embryos left. And so at this point, she's 39 years old. She's like, do I want to go through retrieval again? You know, my eggs are older, that kind of thing. Ended up doing it and used two different surrogates. And they were totally normal genetic embryos. And they didn't transplant into two different surrogates. And so there's the journey of that too, that I think you're confused. Like, okay, well, I'm going to have this surrogate and it's going to automatically work. Mm-hmm. And it's really providing that ongoing support again of, you know, emotional support, mental support, you know, as they transcend through all these different stages of surrogacy to different surrogates. Then they get to the point, well, do we do another round of retrieval or do we do adoption? Mm-hmm. And she's now 42 years old. And I met with her again here recently in my women's health practice. I actually have a women's health clinic and fertility clinic as well, in addition to my coaching services. And I said, how are you doing? You know, and she just breaks down. We forget about taking care of our own health. So just because we have a surrogate doesn't mean our own health isn't impacted too. Right. How's our hormones? How are our cortisol levels? How's our mental health moving through this too? How is your health as a couple? I always do pulse checks. Let's do a pulse check. How are you guys as a couple? When's the last time you went on date night? When's the last time you just talked about something not related to infertility? Right. And so it's really just, let's work on you and figure out your next steps to building and growing your family. Right. And I think we also get caught in, she's like, I have a six-year-old. I should just be happy. No, you want a second child. That's okay to want a second child or a fourth child or a sixth child, whatever your desires, dreams, and goals as a couple is to build your family. I hate when people are met with comments, you should have one child, you should just be happy about that, you should just be satisfied. Like, that's not fair that we have a disease that is, you know, inhibiting our ability to conceive. So we should just be okay with one, you know. So it's working with her. And then the third family I really like to share about is 14 miscarriages. So she had no issues getting pregnant. It was maintaining. Had a surrogate, has a cute two-year-old, gets pregnant again. And in this meantime, she's done a lot of work and research on autoimmune reproductive health. Mm-hmm. And she gets pregnant, contacts her OB. She's like, I found this protocol with Lovenox and prednisone. OB wouldn't do it. Contacts reproductive endocrinologists. They won't do it. Contacts me so I can see her. I'm licensed in her state. I can see her via telemedicine. Mm-hmm. And she's like, will you give me, here's the research, here's the articles, here's the data, here's the protocols. Like, absolutely. She's currently holding her 6-month-old baby right now. So there's also, I think, the side of surrogacy where you had a surrogate the first time. Maybe you never really had a diagnosis given to you. Yeah. Maybe you never had a second or third opinion with a different healthcare provider in the reproductive space, and you really have it on your heart. You'd like to try again naturally. Like, there, you can always do so. And there's many people who don't have that option, but these women sometimes are left with no explanation, or science and medicine has advanced. And we know that things like Lovenox and prednisone can be utilized for underlying autoimmune disorders during, you know, conception for some people. And so it's figuring out and caring for your health as a woman, as a man, as a couple, while you're moving through these different surrogacy journeys. So every surrogacy journey, as you know, looks different as well. Mm-hmm. And really, it's remembering to take care of you while you're on that journey too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very interesting. The different paths that people go through and where they come to the decision that surrogacy is right for them. And it's not the first time I've heard of, and even personally experienced with the agency that I used to own, when someone is working with a surrogate's pregnant, and then all of a sudden the intended mother gets pregnant.
Yes.
And it's like, wow, that hasn't happened in years for me. And now all of a sudden I'm pregnant. And so now they're having two babies, which is
Cool. It's great stories like that. And then it's, you know, the other side of devastation too, where there that's, you know, there's many medical reasons surrogacy is needed. And I think just knowing it's an option and talking about it is such a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit more about that. So, you know, listening to you, some people might be thinking, well, why do people immediately jump to surrogacy and not adoption? Why do you feel in your position as a parent, as someone who's gone through infertility, but also as a medical care provider, why do you feel that surrogacy is just as viable as an option as adoption or anything else?
Love this question. So I do a lot of work with legislation. So for the past 5 years, I've worked with the state of North Dakota and some in the South Dakota to provide insurance benefits for infertility. And that always comes up. Here's my response. And those listening maybe can relate to this, but I'm like, adoption is not a treatment for the disease of infertility. It is a family building option for everybody. So this year I got real spicy in legislation and I said, why don't you adopt? Have you adopted? Have you looked into adoption? Like, why is it our job as those diagnosed with the disease of infertility to adopt all the babies of the world? You know, that's not how adoption works. Adoption is a beautiful gift that anybody and everybody has the right to participate in. I then got even spicier and I said, you know what? What if when my patient came in and was diagnosed with high blood pressure, I offered them the treatment of adoption? Because many more individuals are diagnosed with high blood pressure in this country and we'd have less babies. You know, there'd be more homes if we offered adoption for those with high blood pressure as a treatment option too. Like, do you see how silly this is, people? Like, that is not a treatment. I am asking for treatment for a disease. And so I think if we back it up, surrogacy is an option to provide treatment for those with the disease. It's an actual treatment that will help carry a healthy, viable pregnancy. And when we look at those that often need it, you know, they, once again, hysterectomy, young age, for whatever reason, born without a uterus. My very first bill sponsor, 5 years ago, his wife was born without a uterus. And in the 80s, they were, I think it was 80s or 90s, they were the first couple in North Dakota to have a surrogate. And I believe her sister was the surrogate for them. And so there's many, like, cancer patients, you know, they can't, it's diseases like that that lead to the woman's inability due to another disease or another procedure or another physical disability that she's left with that being the only option. Mm-hmm. Or it's not safe for her to keep getting pregnant. There's reasons that she maybe is getting pregnant, 14 miscarriages, you know, and maybe they have done the full workup and they have been fully evaluated and it's just, you know, not healthy. Perhaps her pregnancy is, she gets very sick. She's a type 1 diabetic and she got very ill during her pregnancy and almost died. She used a surrogate. So it's cases where, once again, why do we only get, you know, one child? This, the type 1 diabetic patient friend of mine had a baby that happened. She got very sick, almost died during her pregnancy and chose what's best for their family. She does not put herself in that position again. They can have, they have embryos left. Why can't they go forward and use those embryos and not put herself in a life-threatening position and use a surrogate instead? Mm-hmm. And so I feel it's just another option when going through infertility that some deserve access to and should be aware of is out there for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that people forget, like, that's typically my response as well. When particularly heterosexual people who can conceive the quote unquote old fashioned way, who say, you know, why don't you just adopt? Well, why didn't you choose adoption before you had a natural pregnancy? Why wasn't that something that you thought was viable, just as viable as a naturally conceived pregnancy?
Absolutely.
there's no difference, right? And, you know, we're talking a lot about infertility and couples, but there's also heterosexual or homosexual men who want to build their families and they don't have a uterus. And so obviously surrogacy and adoption are two options that many gay men consider, right? So
absolutely.
I think it's about looking at the fact that it's 2023 and families come in all shapes, sizes, forms, formations, and paths. And there's no such thing anymore as the traditional family. As much as people want to hang on to this idea that it's about, you know, a man and a woman and all of that, it's not how it is anymore. And so there are many family building options out there, and surrogacy just happens to be one that many people turn to, and many more people are starting to talk about as more mainstream viable option. And I think that's great.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Like option. Like you should have this as an option, just like other things. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, part of what we as surrogacy professionals do, and in my time as a surrogacy agency owner, I did a lot of this, which is we try to educate the surrogates about what intended parents may have gone through before they came to the decision about surrogacy. Whether that was infertility, whether that was repeat miscarriage, whether that was cancer, whether that is homosexual men who have no uterus and obviously need the help of a surrogate. So we try to educate them on these are the paths that intended parents have taken on their way to you, the surrogate. And so what do you feel surrogates need to know about the paths that people have walked before they get to surrogacy?
First thing that comes to my mind when you ask that is the mental and emotional impact that they've been through. No matter what form, like you said, if it's whatever form they're coming from or the reason, there's been hard conversations. There's been deep, really intense emotional conversations between the two. And this is not an easy decision to come to. So these are very raw patients, very, very, very delicate china glass butterflies that are coming forward. And the gift you're offering and willing to give them is amazing and so huge. I have goosebumps thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And the impact you're going to have on them is going to be a forever relationship, hopefully. You're going to be a huge part of this family's life, more than likely forever. And it's such a beautiful gift to even consider it, let alone to go forward with it. And mm-hmm. So the part about the infertility journey is the time. You know, our reproductive lifespan is really short if you think about it, you know. And nowadays, many women are career orientated and we're not wanting to start families till later on in life. And so it's such a tight squeeze too, that once this process gets started, there's also going to be angsty, like now, hurry, that. There's going to be this also sense of urgency. And that's why, is because they've tried for years mm-hmm. on their own before even being diagnosed with infertility. Then they go through who knows how many years of failed treatments and getting to the point of even talking about surrogacy. They're physically, mentally, and emotionally just in a very tough space. Mm-hmm. And so if they feel a little angsty, or if they feel a little hurry, rush, can you do a 7 a.m. ultrasound? Like, try to understand that they're coming from a space of a lot of years, more than likely, of being on this journey. They wanted that baby yesterday. And so they're more than likely going to want to start the process faster. They're going to want to, you know, be really involved. And there's, you know, the state laws. Oh my gosh, that's one thing I'm working on with the state of South Dakota. It's pure insanity. Like mm-hmm. what I'm seeing, where you have to go back and like adopt your own baby back. You know, so there's a lot of legal and a lot of financial aspect. You know, there's every aspect of life is impacted when mm-hmm. you're going to go through surrogacy, really. I mean, legal, financial, mental, physical, well, you know, all of it is part mm-hmm. of it. So I think just really maybe even listening to some podcasts of people who have been through these really long journeys, or really just taking the time to educate yourself, to have a better understanding of why their moods may shift. Maybe one day they're really happy and excited, the next day they're short and grumpy and moody. You know, there might just be some mood fluctuation. Maybe as a couple, you're going to notice that they're disconnect, and then they're really on point, and then they're disconnect. You know, they're going to still be riding this wave with you, even when they're not physically carrying that baby. They're still going to be going through so many different things. And so if you can just have really good patience and understanding and gentleness with them and ahead of time, and knowing that ahead of time, I think that's really important to know.
Yeah, I think those are all really good points. And you touch on a lot of the things that our mental health professionals in the surrogacy industry talk about. And mental health is a huge focus in surrogacy. The reputable agencies always make sure that the surrogate and intended parents have sufficient mental health, not just screening, but support throughout the entire process. And I've interviewed, I think, 3 of my colleagues who are mental health professionals, and we talk a lot about the importance. It's just as important as the medical is the mental health, for sure.
Absolutely. And I think, too, what I've seen with legislation, what needs to be more normalized to the public, too, mm-hmm. is like, it's such disgusting things that I hear and see sometimes, but for the most part, these women carrying these babies going to be part of this family's, you know, life connection, mm-hmm. and that it's not just this like get pregnant, dump them, go get pregnant again, dump it. It's just these like weird thoughts on surrogacy yeah. that are so far from the truth too. Like mm-hmm. these couples are actively side by side with the surrogate. They're actively involved. They're, you know, right there. It's the surrogate has a healthy uterus that mm-hmm. she's willing to help another family simply mm-hmm. who cannot do that on their own. And so it's a gift, mm-hmm. just like adoption. That's a gift. Like that's somebody else's biological child. This is somebody else's uterus that is being right. used to help carry this child. So it's just like really shifting those comments. I love the adoption comments on it. It used to just cringe me. Now I just throw it back. I'm like, oh, you got diabetes? You got high blood pressure? Like I just throw it back in their face as a treatment option too.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's good. I think people, like I said, it's 2023, like get your education, like the information is out there. The stories are out there. You can learn about surrogacy if you really want to understand it. Right.
Absolutely. 100%.
Absolutely. And I just want to make one little side note that we've talked a lot about couples, but I also want to just say that, you know, single people pursue infertility journeys on their own and also surrogacy journeys on their own. And so there are all different paths, single, straight, married, cohabitating, whatever it is. You know, all families are represented in surrogacy and infertility for sure.
Absolutely. I just don't get to see them that much. I'm usually getting all the medically reasons. There's a lot of resources I will direct people to if they're coming, you know, from a different non-medical approach to it. And, you know, it's just once again, like you said, knowing your options is so important that it's an option for you no matter what your journey is to grow, start or grow a family. Know that surrogacy is an option.
Absolutely. Well, it's been so great to chat with you and learn about your personal journey as well as your professional practice. And I just really appreciate you taking the time to share this information with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So that brings us to the end of this episode of the Normalized Surrogacy Podcast by Surrogacy Mentor. I'm your host, Carrie Flamer Powell. I want to thank again, Dr. Tara Bradner for joining me for this chat today. Be sure to check us out online at surrogacymentor.com. If you're interested in knowing whether surrogacy is right for you, take our easy 2-minute quiz on our website. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to learn more about gestational surrogacy and how to have a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey. Talk to you next time.